a throne regained. King Thingolan stood on top of the icy mountain peak. The winds roared around him. Beside him was Sir Roligand, his faithful servant. Below, far below, was a large, partly burned village and what once was his castle. A castle of three generations of Thingolans. The king whipped the unruly mop of red hair from his face. 12 men in armor wandered about the place, giving villagers orders and generally assuming control. Somewhere inside the village was another 20 or so armed men, and Gerald Ariel, the new king. The battle for his castle was long and cost both sides very much. 300 men still lay dead, stinking on the battlefields. Thingolan's family had ruled over this small kingdom for 147 years, since taking it from the Zoths. Thingolan's sidekick, Sir Roligand, and the missing in action Sir Akmar were the last of Thingolan's men. Akmar took an arrow to the chest and rode his horse into the thick woods. Thingolan hoped he survived. Even now, three of Ariel's men were searching the woods for the wounded knight. Most of Thingolan's wealth was lost, but up here, hidden in a cave on this peak, was stashed wealth and weapons. They moved away from the scene of the Lost Kingdom and entered the cave. From behind a rock, the king picked up a torch, and with Roligand standing beside to block the wind, he lit it with a flint. Nice warm light erupted, and they went further into the cave. Sir Akmar wobbled on his horse as he crossed the stream. For the last half hour, he had been hearing the shrill cries of the bear bat. This vicious animal had been eating the sheep from the village until there was no sheep left. All feared the flightless winged animal. Akmar kept moving, going in and out of a delirium. His hold on the saddle was tight, and he was ready to draw his blade and fight till his last breath. Oligan Ruth and Tobin Hantment searched the woods for the escaped knight. They had grand plans of slaying him and becoming knighted, the first knights of the new kingdom. Already the king has sent out a 10-pack of soldiers with some treasure to buy grain and cattle. Sometimes they heard odd, eerie cries in the woods of unknown animals. As they neared the stream, it seemed to get louder. They paused there at the stream, where they could tell the night had recently passed. Tobin pulled out a flask and took a long swig of courage from it before passing it to his fellow knight wannabe. Suddenly, something the size of a large, fat dog was rushing through the bushes at them. They caught a glimpse of leathery wings and a bat-like head as it cascaded at them. Ruth spurred his horse into flight, rushing headlong across the stream. Tobin thought he would stand there and draw his sword, standing his ground. The monster weighed about 100 pounds, had a roundish body, with short limbs that ended in sharp, curved claws, and looked like they were made for digging into moist earth. Nasty thorns stood out from the wide wingspan. Green venom spurted from its fangs as it closed in, shrieking. Its wings lashed Tobin, leaving long, bloody, torn flesh. Tobin howled in pain. He slapped the beast off of it by whacking it with the flat side of his blade. The beast rushed forwards again. A claw raked Tobin's leg, gashing flesh in long, deep cuts. A massive surge of adrenaline powered Tobin's upwards thrust into the thing's belly. He opened it up, and as it retreated crying, it left a trail of intestines. It fell to the ground, twitching after running 90 feet. The wing thorn wounds on Tobin burned like fire as its toxins ran into his bloodstream and into his brain. All the trees seemed to dance, and his horse moved down the stream undirected. He clung to the saddle and was hearing a buzzing sound that roared in his ears. The wounds were purple pulsing bumps on his arms. The claw rips bled. He felt his consciousness clouding away, a dreamlike peace enveloping him. Inside the cave, it was a little warmer. Crude paintings of men hunting oxen and less identifiable animals lined the walls. No one knew how old these images were. The king and his most loyal knight moved away a pile of rocks to reveal a large wooden chest. The king opened it. Inside were 300 gold coins and a long sword in a black scabbard. The onyx blade of Calamazor. Some think it was only a legend. But, as you can see, it is real. No one has wielded it since my great-grandfather, Arnod, used it to fight off the savage Goa'uld people when they ran over the north and killed many good folks. The king picked up the weapon and held it with both arms. My family has vowed never to use this unless it is of the most dire of times. Rulligan busied himself making a fire with supplies from the sack he had slung across his back. There is a curse on this blade. An unpredictable misfortune will fall on the user. My grandfather's oldest son, Vylvin, was killed by a serpent bite in his sleep 3 days after the victory over the vile Goa'ulds. Now I shall bring it back into battle again. My son is already dead, killed by those invading bastards. Soon I will have my kingdom back. Olgan sang on in the castles he joined in, drinking lots of wine before vomiting and passing out. He told the others that Tobin had been killed by a monster that had wounded him, and he stabbed the beast and lost his sword in it, barely making it back alive. No sign of Akmar, he said. Maybe the beast has killed him, the others suggested. The king had already passed out by the time Olgan joined the party. No questions that day. Rulligan made tea from the Blalan berries that were left in the cave. The tea was soothing and helped ease away their soreness. They talked and planned. Tomorrow they would set out for Roxdale. There they could hire some fighters and buy some horses with their remaining treasure. Then they would make their stand against the invaders. Warmed and made sleepy by the fire and the tea, the two slumbered, having the blue-tinted dreams the berries gave. Healing dreams, the herbalists say. Tobin turned blue during his long stupor, nearly dead from the wounds and the toxins. All throughout the night he slept. All the next day he slept as well, having wild visions and shamanistic experiences that would forever change him. He also nearly choked to death on his own vomit and soiled himself during this time. Olgan woke up the next afternoon with only a mild hangover. The wine was very good. He should be really sick for the amount he drank. He selected a sword from the armory. This sword had recently belonged to an enemy who would no longer be needing it. It was a little better than the sword he had. It was already late for the executions. He assumed that the new king must be sleeping in. He joined his comrades in bullying and ordering the villagers about. Sir Akmar rode into Condell and sold the extra sword there for 2 gold pieces and 3 silver coins. He then saw a healer who applied a salve from many strong herbs. The stuff made him semi-conscious and sedated, pain-free and floaty. In this state, the arrow was removed and medicinal extracts applied to the wound. He paid the healer 2 gold coins and got himself a room in the nearest inn. 1 silver piece a night. He slept long and hard, having been up 34 hours straight. The morning saw King Thingolin and Rilligand setting out on foot for Rokesdale, a long walk, about 3 days. They ate fungal growths off the trees and found some vegetation they could pull out of the ground and roast at night. Walking 14 hours a day, they slowly made progress. Akmar rode out then, back to the castle, to watch it from a safe distance, and see if there'll be any sign or word of his king, whom he assumed to be dead by now. Akmar rode through the forest slowly, thinking the best thing to do now would probably be to try and take the new king out. If he could get past his guards, that is. His thoughts were interrupted by the sound of a horse coming at him from hiding at full gallop. Withdrop Nordens, the 3rd member of the king's search party, was coming at him, howling savagely, sword drawn over his head. Thanks to being fast and well-seasoned, Akmar had his blade out by the time the horses met. Akmar's blade hissed forwards, cutting a bloody rent in Withdrop's cheek. Withdrop nicked Akmar's forehead with a minor cut. As their blades locked, Withdrop used his larger size and weight to help him wrest the blade away from Akmar. The blade spiraled away into a clump of bushes. Withdrop had driven himself full pace into Akmar's punch. The sheer force of it threw him off his horse and into the tree headfirst. The neck snapped wetly, and the big man spasmed and died. Sir Akmar tied his horse up and gathered Withdrop's steed. He found his sword and retrieved it from the bush. Then he searched Withdrop's body for goodies, collecting a sword, 1 silver coin, and 6 coppers, and a half-drank flask of wine. Akmar drank the rest of it while burying the body. Wine on an empty stomach made Akmar sleepy, and he drifted off in a clearing. Olgin rode back into the woods to continue his search for Akmar. He had stolen a bottle of wine and was drinking it as he rode along, not expecting to see anyone alive in these woods. Olgin got smashed that day and slept about 5 hours in the woods. He came nowhere near Akmar that day. That evening, as he began wandering back to the castle to spend a night inside recovering from his building hangover, he saw Tobin sprawled out on the forest bed, his face blue. King Gerald finally woke up that afternoon, a loud headache still rumbling through him. He felt bloated with piss. He got out of bed and went to the window. Far below, he saw children playing. As he pulled out his royal member, one kid hit his face against the castle wall and counted while the other kid scrambled off to hide. Gerald was glad to add a new variation of rules to this game. The king pisses on the kid counting a lot of piss. Gerald laughed at the kid's reaction to piss from the sky. Then the king was back to bed happily. His drunk head dreamed distorted dreams of torturing girls in their teens. Olgin got off his horse and walked over to Tobin. He looked dead all right. Olgin noticed he did not have a sword on him. Must have lost it in a fight with the monster, he thought. Olgin's fat fingers searched Tobin for coins and such. That's when he discovered that the man was still alive. Olgin continued his search and came up with 7 silver coins and a small ruby, broken on one corner. He stashed the stolen loot in his underwear and moved on. On the second day of their walk, heavily weighed down by gold and rubies, King Fingerland and his loyal knight overcame the scene of a slaughter. A coach was crashed into the tree by a dead horse. 3 arrows stuck out of the horse, arrows the king recognized as those of the evil, vile Gorhilts. Despite inside the coach was the dead bodies of a family, axe blows and stab wounds. Everything of value stripped along with the people's clothes. A large chunk of the horse had been cut away and eaten raw as the savages travel. This boded very bad. Very bad indeed. There may be a whole horde of these savages. Damn! This was the big day. Execution day! Hooray, hooray for execution day. Stumblefork, the knobby dwarf, went door to door, ordering all out to the chopping theater by order of the king. Stumblefork did freakish acts of dancing and frog-like flips. Silver trumpets blared in the chopping zone. The king was there, his eyes glittering with pleasure. His warriors were all armed and dressed up in their polished armors. The new king gave a speech on how everyone who opposes him shall be killed. For example, Graven Holgin helped the escape of your former king by letting his hogs out to stampede before we could secure the area. Well, for that act of betrayal, I sentence you to be beheaded. Gerald exclaimed, smiling happily. Graven tried to flee, but the king's men had already positioned themselves around him and dragged him to the fresh, unstained chopping block. People in the crowd moaned and wailed as 2 of Gerald's knights had the man down his neck in the neck niche. Gerald picked up a sharp, double-bladed axe. How does it feel knowing you're gonna die? How's it feel knowing you're gonna die? The new king asked the man with a twisted, hateful grin. Your mom is a whore, bitch, swine, the doom man said. Gerald went into a rage at the bastard's defiance. He was supposed to beg and cry, plead for mercy. He sliced down with the axe, hacking the man's head mostly off. A third of the neck was still attached as the man flopped about. Gerald flipped the axe back up and hacked down a second time. The men holding the corpse backed off. The second blow bit deeper. But still, that stubborn head would not sever. Gerald screamed and cursed, hacking again and again until he dropped the axe with exhaustion. The body was badly mutilated, and he realized he just made a fool ass of himself in front of everybody. Let that be a lesson, he said offhandedly, and he stormed back into his castle without another word. Even his men were looking at each other funny. Sir Akmar awoke and drew his sword. He was alone in the woods, and he had slept too late to stop the execution. He decided to watch the road out of the castle and slay all who leave. The rest of the day was uneventful for Akmar. That night, the new king sent out a wagon with 4 horses, a fat merchant, and 3 plate-mail-clad bodyguards. This was to be Akmar's first raid. The good knight surged from his hiding spot among the trees at full gallop. He jumped off his horse onto the wagon, but his heel caught and he was twisted and thrown from the side. The merchant hastened, the horses and the guards prepared their weapons. Akmar ran to his horse and remounted it. A crossbow whistled by him. Akmar was back on his horse and charging for them, and the crossbow man hurriedly reloaded. Akmar's horse was quicker than the reloader, and the knight swished his blade into the man's wrist as he worked the crossbow. The man howled in pain and dropped the weapon. The other 2 guards lashed with their swords, one leaving a deep gash in Akmar's cheek. Akmar fell back, letting them go. He held a hand to his flowing face. The wounded knight picked up the crossbow and searched fruitlessly for the bolt. He held his face till the bleeding stopped. Already it was swelling up so bad that part of his left eye vision was blocked. The stricken knight knew the landscape well, and he rode his horse to a good hiding spot and rested. Despite the stinging pain, he slowly lapsed off into a fitful sleep. 2 1/3 hours later, Akmar's horse nuzzled him awake. Akmar opened his eyes to look at his steed. The horse was obviously scared of something.